Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Steve Grasso, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, the commodities king Dennis Gartman is here with the one chart he says you need to see to make money in this market. Plus, the S&P 500 hovering at record highs, but 81 stocks in the index are in bear market territory, down 20% or more from their recent highs. The names and which ones the traders are buying when we go bargain hunting. And check out shares of Microsoft reporting earnings moments ago, jumping to a fresh all-time high in the after-hour session. That conference call kicks off in just about 30 minutes. We've got full team coverage. David Garrity from GVA Research is here getting ready to monitor the call on that red phone. And Josh Lipton is back at headquarters tracking the call from there. But first, we start off with the big story of the day. After 9 years in prison, the parole board voting today that O.J. Simpson will be officially released in October. Just kidding. No. Just kidding. Here's the real big story for us today. It's Amazon's world, and we're just living in it. The e-commerce giant making a deal with Sears to sell Alexa-enabled appliances, and that sent another shockwave through the market. And in almost a blink of an eye, the deal wiping out $12 billion in market cap. Home Depot, Whirlpool, Best Buy, all sinking about 4%, while Lowe's was down 6%. Is anything safe from the wrath of Amazon, and which companies could be the next target? Ski.
Well, I clearly thought Home Depot was one because we've had this conversation. You've asked me and I've said Home Depot is Amazon proof. Until today, I thought they were. And quite frankly, when they report in a couple weeks, I think they'll prove to be somewhat Amazon proof and they still have their moat. But obviously, it didn't happen today. What companies are? One of the other things we said, MasterCard and Visa. I know Steve talks about this for a while, but these are two names we've been steadfast in. Not so much Amazon proof, but something that sort of goes hand in hand, symbiotic relationship.
Symbiotic.
Like that.
I went to, beneficial.
I went to school.
Good job. As opposed to parasitic relationship. And now to answer your final question, what space now is in jeopardy of being Amazoned? Pretty much healthcare is probably in the crosshairs. So I don't know where it's going to manifest itself, but maybe the, you know, Karen's world, the Rite Aids of the world, and those types of places. Who knows what happens on that front?
Yeah. That's true. You know, it reminds me a little bit back like 20 years ago when Amazon was really just kind of this nascent e-tailer. They would go into different different categories, and then you'd see market cap just come off of these sort of categories. What we're seeing now, this is a really smart move. I mean, for them, do they really care about having Sears appliance here? But they're really implementing something that's very important for their strategy going forward, which is this voice-enabled thing. They have a big lead on it, and they can continue to do lots of different deals like this. At the end of the day, would I be selling Home Depot down 4 or 5% at some point based off this news? Not particularly, but it's important, I think, to think about all the different areas that they're going to disrupt. This is a very different deal than, let's say, their acquisition of Whole Foods, and it just kind of just show you that these guys are not going to stop anywhere, and they're going to continue to push.
I think your point is accurate. It's about the voice-enabled stuff. This has nothing to do with appliances, or it does for Sears. Yeah. Sears had 40% market share. 20%. Now it's 18%. Mm-hmm. So that, I'd be a buyer on the dips, Home Depot's, Lowe's, Best Buy's. But the voice-enabled, that's big. That's the big angle on this.
Yeah. I mean, the impact on a Home Depot, 8% of revenues come from appliances, 11% of revenues come from appliances for Lowe's. I mean, I don't know. If you're, though, going to buy a Kenmore appliance, you probably you would not have gone to Home Depot anyway.
Maybe. I'm not sure how many people, when they buy an appliance, are set on, I only want a Kenmore. Some are very loyal and they only want a Kenmore. Some maybe shop around. It's a question of price. What I'm not sure of, and I don't, no one can know yet, is how much does this affect Home Depot outside of appliances? Is that customer no longer going to walk in the door at Home Depot and buy all the other stuff they were going to buy that Amazon probably likely will soon be selling as well? That's the concern here. I think that Home Depot is down a lot today, but it's had a really nice run. Key's been all over it for 50 points probably. I wouldn't be surprised
who's
to see it come in a little bit more.
Who's going to buy an appliance, though, online? You know, this is different than the TV. This is different than the showroom.
How is it different than the TV,
why
really?
Is it different?
You need a
it's just
plumber
bigger
to hook up a nat gas. If you have a dryer, you need a plumber. It's a lot more complicated.
Steve, you might have said the same thing. Who would buy a mattress online like that? I mean, and so Casper is, you know, I mean, it's got a big valuation, and then Target just invested in it. And this is
unrolling a mattress, though, I think is a lot easier than putting it.
Okay.
I feel like even if it's just psychology of putting an appliance in
your
house.
About
didn't they just talk about adding the Geek Squad or whatever?
This is what's really important. I think you have to think about what Amazon's doing with Whole Foods. They're going with a barbell strategy here. They recognize the fact that there's going to be a need to be a bricks and mortar destination for a lot of different products, but they also want to give you the possibility of getting it the way you want to get it. So you, for years, Mel, you used to call Best Buy what? Amazon showroom.
And you know what? It could be the same for Home Depot at this point.
It will be, and it will be for Best Buy. If you don't think that Best Buy is going to link up, and Best Buy is doing a good job online, but this is what's happening here. This is the trade, and this is one reason I think it's really important. Remember, have you guys looked at Costco recently? The day before the Whole Foods acquisition, Costco is trading at $181. It's trading at $151. Can't get out of its own way. There's some business models that Amazon is really, you know, they're really coming at really hard. This was always in plain sight as far as I'm concerned when you think about their membership fees and that sort of thing. You think about what Prime is. So Costco is probably going to stay down for a bit. Some of these guys like Best Buy that just got hit, Dick's. I know you like Dick's. That's one where, to me, it's kind of Amazon-proof. It could have the opportunity to link up with some sort of e-commerce player. So what I'm saying is, with some of these things that are down and out, they're not done yet. There's going to be some link-ups, I think, is really important.
I think Dan makes cogent points throughout.
Which one in particular?
The number of them. You know, it's funny. Voice-enabled appliances.
Yes, you
know
what they call that in my house?
What? Ghee, do the laundry.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So that's why this is all lost on me. And I don't go to places as a showroom. Don't you feel obligated?
I do.
We're off the rails here. I do. I'm waltzing into Best Buy or Home Depot.
I don't take up the time of the salesperson.
Right.
I simply look. I look at the specs. I compare. I see if things, you know, physically look the way I want them to look. And then I go off and
I Google and find the lowest price. I got long JCPenney around the $4.50 level. The biggest takeaway, Sears has been going out of business for a long time. JCPenney is still there. It's worth taking a look at it.
JCPenney, who also are in appliances now.
Exactly. Yeah. From Marvin Ellison, who's a former Home Depot guy, going over there, selling it, but he takes on no inventory. So he sells it basically on a consignment, so it doesn't cost him anything.
And that's why Amazon's doing it.
Exactly.
Who would buy any of these Amazon assaulted stocks here on the back of these pullbacks?
Listen, so Home Depot is going to report, I think, on August 8th. I'm sure I'm going to get corrected on Twitter, but on or about August 8th, let's just say, I think there's going to be an opportunity to buy the stock in earnings a little bit lower than we are. When I say a little bit lower, 1.5%, 2%, because I think each quarter for the last 4 years has been better than the first previous prior quarter, and I think the same thing is going to hold true here. You're going to want to be long Home Depot in earnings.
A week and a half ago or so, I bought Macy's. I think there's something with that brand. I think Karen and I were talking about it a little earlier. I think there's a lot of possibilities to keep a lot of the good stores. I think to do leasebacks on some of their best real estate, pay down some of that debt, and do a deal with an e-commerce player. So that one's kind of interesting to me. And Best Buy, you know, it just had this tremendous quarter. The stock broke out. This was a couple months ago. It's given all that one back. I think that could get interesting in a certain spot because, listen, you know, a few years ago we had multiple electronics retailers. Everyone was calling for the death of Best Buy. Well, it survived, and I think there's probably another leg to this one.
Karen?
I'm sort of wondering, what is the ultimate end game for Amazon, right, as they go and disrupt industry after industry? And I don't know if it's just to deliver the goods faster, easier, cheaper to the consumer. Maybe. That's a lot of what's happened. Or is it to one day then turn up their pricing once they have everybody locked in. You order everything on Alexa. Alexa turns
and then
on.
And ratchet up the price.
Maybe. I don't know. I think Jeff Bezos, I doubt it's very much about money at this point. You know, how much money do you possibly need? I think changing the landscape of the world.
Would you have asked that same question, though, of a Walmart or a Costco? Because they sell lots of different things. They sell electronics. They sell home furnishings, groceries. Would you have said, what is their game plan?
Their game plan, I think, ultimately was to deliver value to the customer. All right, let's say that's Amazon's game plan. What does that mean for all of the customers? Extra money. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it goes. I don't know.
Back to Amazon. I mean, the whole thing right now, the strategy is they have 85 million Prime accounts, and what they want to do is take them from people who spend $1,300 a year on it to $5,000 to $10,000. I mean, that's it. And if the margins are thin, as they have been, it doesn't matter. They're getting more and more of your consumer dollars.
All right. Well, it's been a tough year for rivals of Amazon, but could some crush stocks be setting up for a major comeback? Let's go off the charts to Todd Gordon at TradingAnalysis.com. Hey, Todd, what are you looking at?
Hey, Melissa, let's first take a look at Amazon, as you guys are discussing, in relationship to the XRT, which is the retail ETF. And as you'll see, Amazon in blue, XRT in orange, Amazon is the retail killer. So as we can see, Both markets dropped here in 2016, but at that point, the relationship starts to diverge. You start to see Amazon move up as retail is moving down. So the more they're putting the pressure on retail, we are seeing Amazon rally. So how far can Amazon go? Let's go to the technicals and do a nice Carter Worth parallel channel here. We've connected the lows here all the way back from January 2016. And what you want to do is then just extend that line up to develop a topside resistance level. And what you can see here is the market's been kind of riding the lower level of this channel of support. So if this thing were really to get on its horse and really crush the retail, you're looking at like 1,300 at some point before upside resistance is broken, or is tested, I should say. So we still have some room to go here through that 1,000 mark. Now, the casualties, as you guys were mentioning, Kroger, the acquisition of Whole Foods and other food places here is going to spell more pressure here in Kroger. So we're looking at the same kind of concept here, uptrend in KR. Support doesn't come in here in Kroger until about 14 bucks. And what I'll do is draw your attention to these prior declines. This guy right here was about 68%. This guy was about 40%. If you kind of average those out, right about 54%, that's going to drop you right in the middle of this trend line, right at about 13, 14 bucks. So it looks like you have lower to go in Kroger. One more stock that we could pull up here, well, let me clear it, is going to be Macy's. Same thing, no trend lines here, but we're going to go to a retracements. I know Grasso likes looking at Fibonacci retracements or that half back level. If you look at the rally in Macy's on the log scale, the 50% retracement is going to be right at about the $15 mark, okay, $15 to $17 mark. So it looks like there's going to be lower levels to go in Macy's before that guy would look to find support.
All right, Todd, thank you. Todd Gordon, TradingAnalysis.com. Dan, does that chart of Macy's concern you? You like to look at charts also.
I do, and you know, I hadn't looked at it in that capacity yet, and that made me a little nervous. Now, listen, I think all of them are, you know, listen, when it comes to charts, I mean, I use it as one input, and I think that's really actually kind of interesting to me. You know, you don't want to get in a situation where you're buying a stock for fundamental reasons, you believe to be fundamental reasons, and then you end up averaging down, which would be about 30% is what he suggests. I just kind of believe that there's untapped assets there that some investors, activists a few years ago, were valuing at 15, 20 billion. Now you have a market cap of about $7 billion, 25 billion in sales. I think there's probably something to do here, and I think it probably happens in 2017.
You know, when you do think about Macy's, when you look just the real estate, and they've talked about real estate, talk about they don't want to make it a REIT, but there is what, 21 billion in real estate value, or 26
billion? It seems not. Because
depending, depending on how you do, and it's basically around one flagship store. That's probably $4 billion, you know, here.
With 34th Street, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at $7 billion in market cap. I think there is a lot to do here at Macy's.
All right. Coming up, even with stocks at record highs, nearly 81 names in the S&P are in bear market territory. And the traders will tell you the names they're calling big bargains. We're going to go bottom fishing. Plus, Snapchat sinking, but it's not stopping CEO Evan Spiegel from enjoying his new fortune since taking the company public. Could it mean more trouble ahead for the embattled social media company? And check out shares of Visa soaring to all-time highs in the after-hour session following its earnings report. We'll bring you all the details next. Much more Fast Money still ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Visa hitting an all-time high today after its earnings report. That conference call is currently underway. Deirdre Bose is in San Francisco with the very latest. Hi, Deirdre.
Hey, Melissa. And that's right. Visa seems to be doing all the right things. As you said, its stock hitting an all-time high in extended trade. It's already surged more than 25% this year, and that makes it one of the best performing Dow components. Now, Visa continues to see solid growth in payments volume and processed transactions. The bigger picture here, though, guys, is that it is capitalizing on the digitization of payments, and it's moving past. On the call just now, executives talking about the opportunity to displace cash and checks. The company is also trying to expand its reach into Europe, recently expanding its partnership with PayPal to offer debit cards there. And here at home, the solid quarter was helped by strengthening economy. U.S. consumer spending has been on the rise, and that has helped boost payment volumes here. Visa is expecting a solid second quarter, a half, I should say, as well, raising its full-year financial targets. And lastly, guys, I thought this was interesting. Nomura was out with a note recently identifying a possible Amazon risk to Visa, saying that Amazon's acquisition of Whole Foods and its new payment product offerings have brought risk of disruption back into focus, but they continue to believe that competitors will find it more cost-effective to leverage existing ecosystems like Visa's. Guys.
All right. Thank you very much, Deidre Bosa. We should note that a lot of the credit card issuers, like Capital One, moving higher on the back of these earnings as well. And take a look at MasterCard. That's moving higher as well in the payment space in general. Grasso.
So Visa and MasterCard. MasterCard's at an all-time high as well. I do. But the only one that's not at an all-time high is American Express when you look at credit card companies. They're both up 25%, Visa and MasterCard. I think the consumer's in great shape. I think you have more room to fly there. I'm long Square, different side of the business. Mm-hmm. But I always think that this would be a good tuck-in for any of these companies. They need exposure to Square, up 93% year-to-date.
Unless you're J.P. Morgan, you just want to have a PayPal relationship,
Why buy the cow?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you get the milk for free, or almost free.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The payment space, obviously, is a really exciting place to be. Difference, Capital One looks like that was good, although this is a different bet. Capital One, you do have credit risk, which is a very different bet than MasterCard, which I own, Visa. Those are very, very similar. I mean, we see it everywhere. There are stores now that do not take cash in New York City. It's so that trend is happening for sure. I don't know how it gets disintermediated in the short term. I'm staying long MasterCard. I mean, it's been a phenomenal business. If you want more overseas exposure, Visa is the way to go.
Yeah.
Operating margins for Visa, 68%, which is, if you think about it, it's pretty extraordinary, much better than the street was looking for. And this is a story we've talked about, I think, for as long as we've had this this show's been in existence, as long as Visa and MasterCard have been publicly traded companies. The story's intact. I mean, the negative side, people shoot on them again in valuation. You know what? They continue to grow in valuation. They process transactions without the risk. Good business to be in.
Dan?
These things are all getting a little frothy here. I mean, I think the growth story, the secular growth story, is pretty well known at this point, no matter what you're looking at. I know that, like, PayPal, for instance, I think was downgraded today. It's up 50% on the year. You know, we know that they have peer-to-peer. We know a lot of people are going to be getting in this sort of stuff. I mean, obviously, this J.P. Morgan announcement with PayPal is fantastic. It's just becoming a very competitive landscape. And I think when you consider the valuations, you know, PayPal's trading 33 times expected EPS and sales growth in the high teens. At some point, on a PE to growth, these get a little expensive, especially in a very crowded space when sentiment is all
think about all the millennials that are in debit cards that are switching over for the first time to credit cards. I mean, that's a whole nother length. You talk about international growth, you talk about people that never had credit cards before, and then you add on millennials that have been on debit cards worrying about having a job, worrying about moving out of their parents' basement, and now they actually get some credit cards. So I think it's a untapped thing where there's still some upside.
I'm big on that Venmo.
How that works at all.
What are you talking about?
We went to dinner that time, and everybody Venmoed. And what happened with you?
I'm not really sure.
He went to the ATM.
All right, time for a little buzzkill here. Check out the transports. Falling 1% today, even as the broader indices sit at record highs. The airlines, they were a big drag on the space. United, Southwest, Delta all fell more than 1%. The IYT transportation ETF now down nearly 3% from its high last Friday. And if you are a Dow theorist, Dan, this is not necessarily good news.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, when Guy started the business, the Dow theory was the way to trade here. And you really had to be cognizant of this thing. But, you know, I think it's worth noting that 2 days in a row, you have pretty dramatic underperformance by UAL and CSX after they both reported earnings. Obviously, there was some disappointment there. But to see the sort of follow through off of relative highs, that's just worth keeping an eye on here. And, you know, as we get deeper into earnings season, I think it's really important not to get too fixated on stocks like Netflix that, you know, explode 10% to new all-time highs on big volume. And let's look at some more things that are like more tied to the economy, a bit more cyclical, that sort of stuff. And to me, I think this sector is obviously right there. So to me, keep an eye on these names. Let's see how some of these old economy stocks continue to, respond to earnings.
At what point do you get concerned about the airlines?
I'm not concerned. I mean, well, not delighted. UAL, American, and Delta, I own them all. United Airlines, you know, the earnings obviously were disappointing. That's why the stock was down so much. But I think 3-day rule, so this will be the third day tomorrow. I will look to buy some if it's down. I think it's a little bit overdone.
Yeah. Grasso?
I think that when we've all been nervous about certain aspects of it, of the market, subsectors of the market. But when you look at the S&P chart, we continue to make new highs. So it doesn't really matter about what horse is taking you over the goal line. It seems like people are just coming into equities. So you can do it. Fixing them?
Yeah,
so
it's okay. Go on.
You can pick whatever horse you want. At this point, the overall market wants to go higher.
All right. Still ahead. Check out shares of Microsoft hitting an all-time high in the after-hours session. We'll hear from CEO Satya Nadella on what drove the quarter. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
listen to me very carefully.
The commodities king, Dennis Gartman, says he has the only chart you need to see to make money in this market. He'll reveal it next. Plus, I've got two tickets to paradise. Snap shareholders are in anything but paradise. Meanwhile, CEO Evan Spiegel isn't skipping a beat after his fairy tale wedding. We've got a special report. Much more Fast Money still ahead.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We're live at the Nasdaq Market Site. It was another record close for the Nasdaq today. The index now up for 10 straight sessions. Here's what's coming up in the second half of the show. Microsoft hitting an all-time high in the after-hour session. The stock just took a huge leg higher as the conference call is just a few minutes away. We've got full team coverage. Josh Lipton's at CNBC headquarters. David Garrity is at the Plasma monitoring the red phone. We'll bring you all the headlines as they break. But first, we start off with the markets, because even as the S&P sits at record highs, 81 companies in the index are in a bear market, down more than 20% from their recent highs. Many of those names belong to one sector in particular. Dom Chu's in the newsroom, breaking it all down. Dom.
Well, Melissa, a handful of sectors dominate that list of stocks in bear market territory in the S&P. Energy in particular is a big part of the story. Around a quarter of all those bear market stocks you mentioned come from this sector alone. So perhaps no surprise, given that the recent negative sentiment around oil prices kind of continues. The sector overall is the second worst performer in the S&P. The only one worse is telecom. So which stocks are the deepest in bear market territory? Among the worst performers, drilling companies like Transocean. It now sits 50% below its 52-week high. Also dominated by oil and gas exploration and production companies, E&P companies. Anadarko Petroleum, 40% below its recent highs. Chesapeake Energy, 42% below. Newfield Exploration, 48% below. And then there's Range Resources, which is currently around 50% below its 52-week high as well. Now, the extreme bearishness on the sector could make this earnings season key in terms of investing returns or losses. According to Thomson Reuters IBIS, if all energy earnings come in as expected, the sector could see earnings growth of, get this, 546% over the same time last year. So the question is, will that be enough to turn the tide on all the negativity around these stocks? Melissa, it could also mean some pretty big stock swings for these energy names in and around those earnings days, guys. Back over to you.
All right, Dom Chu, thank you very much. Dom Chu in the newsroom. All right, Steve Grossley, you have said time and time again that this is the trade you want to be in
reason. This is the true laggard in the marketplace. The XLE is down 13% or so.
What concerns you, though, about this? Because it's been a laggard for a while.
It concerns me that oil bounced off a huge retracement level going back to 1998 all the way to 2008. I charted and I came up with 42.25, basically, was the 764 retracement. And we stopped basically at 42.5. For me, if we don't stay in this purgatory level in crude and we collapse again, it's going to collapse for all these different companies as well. That's going to be the driving force. If we stay right around here to $50, I think that's the sweet spot for these energy companies. Above 50, massive amount of production comes back online. That will take the legs out from these companies as well, because then oil will fall. But if we stay right here, it's sort of below the radar where these companies can actually make some money.
Yeah. Any look like values to you?
I mean, I have had Golar for a really long time. It is a very different bet. It is on LNG use around the world. However, it trades with oil. It doesn't matter. I mean, so, you know, and when things start to trade in integers, then I find them interesting because something else is going on. But this is the one I've been long. I really don't have much energy exposure. I know it'll bounce and then I'll feel bad because it's so turbocharged.
Right.
The operating margins can explode, and then if you're levered, then the earnings can go nuts. But not owning it has felt more comfortable for me.
If you had to be in
oil. Is this a would you rather?
No.
Oh, no, if you had
to be.
Ended.
If you had to be, what subsector, what stock, what would you look
so
at?
If you believe that Steve's right and oil's going to sort of bottom here and sort of trend towards $50, you want to be in levered place. Anadarko Petroleum, I think, reports on the 24th. Not necessarily an earnings play, but that will be a catalyst, obviously. However, that being said, ExxonMobil now has traded sideways since, let's call it March, around $80, $80.50 or so. I think you take your cues from ExxonMobil. If Exxon can get above 83, I think Exxon will lead the commodity, and then maybe we're out of the woods. But until Exxon gets out of this sort of nowhere land that it's been in, I think it's a no touch.
Despite crude's comeback from its 2017 lows, commodities as a group still saw their worst first half of the year since 2010, and that could be a bad sign for the broader markets, according to our next guest. Commodities King Dennis Gartman joined us now with what he says is the most important chart in the market today. Dennis, we've got to get straight to this chart. What is it?
It's a fascinating chart of the ratio of commodity prices relative to the broad stock market. And it is astonishing how cheap commodities are relative to stocks, or how expensive stocks are relative to commodities. We have not seen this ratio get to these levels since the bubble, the dot-com bubble in the end of the last century, or going all the way back to 1971-72. It's an extraordinary chart. Commodities are unbelievably inexpensive. Stocks, I think, are relatively expensive. And what's interesting to me, all we talk about now is deflation. And yet, if you look at the commodity markets, the grain markets have made new have held their lows very well. Gold has held its lows almost a year and a half. Crude oil has tried to hold its lows. The base metals have held their lows. Something is going on out there that I think tells me that commodity prices are likely to do demonstrably better over the course of the next, not the next week, not the next month, maybe not even the next quarter, but certainly over the next several years, we're going to see that ratio move back to the levels that you see those peaks. It may take some time, but I think that's the way to trade.
Dennis, let me ask you something. When you use the term commodities, what portion of that is oil?
It depends. Two of the broad indices that everybody looks at, one of them, I think it's the GSCI, which tends to be a tad more skewed towards crude oil, probably 35 or 40%. There are other indices that are less skewed towards crude oil, but crude oil and natural gas obviously are large components of most of those indices. Pay attention, however, to what's going on in the base metals. Pay attention to what's going on in the grains. That's where I'm paying my attention to right now.
Dennis, you come on the show before and said that in the long run, though, you think oil will eventually be worthless, and I may be paraphrasing at this point. So is this a short-term call, or is this really a call that's focused on commodities ex oil?
It is a call ex oil. I think it's going to be very difficult for WTI to get much above $50, $51, $52 per barrel, because as long as the contango remains at $1 or $2 for the 1 year and 2 year forward, anything above $50 gives you $52 for the 1 year. And I'm telling you, as Steve Grasso just said, that brings a lot of crude oil back online. So I think on balance, crude oil can get a bounce. It's getting a bounce, but that bounce is going to be relatively minimal. What's really happening is what's going on in grains, what's going on in the base metals, what's going on in the softs. That's the interesting thing to me.
All right, Dennis, great to see you. Thanks a lot for your time and for that chart. Dennis Gartman of the Gartman Letter. To Karen's point, though, in terms of these ETFs, I mean, if you're taking a look at an ETF that tracks, for instance, the CRB, that's mostly oil. Right. So if you're a believer in Dennis, you want to be in the agricultural commodities, the metals, the other side of it, which may not be reflected in that sort of index.
Yeah, so I don't know what the right way to play that is. I mean, clearly you have two very different things going on here that should be separate. They should be one that has just the non-oil commodities.
It sounds to me, he just talked about contango, so higher prices going forward out on the curve versus backwardation where there's lower prices going out on the curve. That ship does not turn around very quickly. So for me, I think that you're going to see right around here, right around 50, not much higher, not much lower. That's the sweet spot. But equities are still a better bet than commodities.
Yeah.
I think steel, I mean, if you want to get into real commodities, I mean, there's been a little very quiet resurgence in steel stocks. U.S. steel is going from 20 to 25, closed slightly lower on the day. But there's clearly at least there's some traction in some of those names. So if you want to be in the space, and Pete has mentioned this a few times over the last couple of weeks, I think the steel names still have some room to the upside.
In terms of that chart, though, and the extrapolation that Dennis is making, we're focusing on the commodity side of it, but the flip side is that stocks are overvalued. I mean, that's the other part of the chart, Dan. What do you think of that?
Well,
do you think that's a useful sort of tool to look at?
I think valuation has not been a useful tool to trade the stock market or not invest in the stock market over the last few years. I think we'll look back after we have a considerable correction, and I think valuation will be highlighted as one of the reasons why we corrected. But right now, it seems like there's a lot of things working. And, you know, part of that conversation that we didn't even mention is that the U.S. dollar index today had a matched 52-week low. And when you think about that, that should be something that's really beneficial to the price of oil, to the price of a lot of commodities. I'm surprised that oil is not trading better off of that.
That would worry me about the oil trade, about being in the equity side of it.
Yeah, but if you look at the correlation, the inverse correlation that is usually on, it's on again and off again. So all bets are off. And I don't make believe that I have the answer to that. But that inverse relationship, that correlation, is definitely off the table. And when it's not predictable as the way it used to be, a longer term chart, it was very predictable. It's not predictable now. It could cause a lot of losses in a lot of portfolios if you start betting on it now.
Still ahead, Microsoft out with earnings after the bell. The stock hitting an all-time high following the report. And take a look at that spike. That started just before the conference call got underway. The conference call is now about 5 minutes in. David Garrity of GVA Research is at the Plaza manning the red phone. We'll get his thoughts on the quarter as well as comments from the CEO of Microsoft later this hour. Plus, Snapshare is feeling the heat, sitting near record lows as CEO Evan Spiegel soaks up the sun on vacation. And a key event next week could put even more pressure on the stock. We've got those details when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Snap falling again today, sitting near all-time lows, and that's got CEO Evan Spiegel feeling the heat, but not in the way you think. Page 6 of the New York Post reporting that the 27-year-old billionaire was spotted vacationing on a mega yacht in Europe, a risky move for the CEO of a sinking stock, with a key event looming next week. Julie Borson's in Los Angeles with more on that. Julia.
Hey, Melissa, those reports of Evan Spiegel on vacation, no comment from the company there, come just a week and a half away from a major expiration of a lockup period on Snap shares, with about 85% of Snap shares becoming available for sale before the end of August. Now, on Monday, July 31st, about 400 million shares will become available from Snap early investors, according to JP Morgan, which also says on August 14th, following Snap's quarterly earnings, another 782 million shares from employees will become available, with another expiration on the lockup of 20 million shares at the end of August. Now, Snap shares have been plummeting since its first earnings report as a public company showed slowing growth, and ahead of the lockup, short selling has been on the rise. If history is any example, it could get worse before that lockup. Now, 1 week prior to the day of their lockup expirations, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter traded down by 14% on average, according to MKM Partners. Now, JP Morgan warns that there could be, quote, still be further downside into and after that initial July 31st date, particularly as stepping into shares at that point would likely require taking on second quarter earnings risk. Now, earlier today, CNBC, former Twitter CEO Dick Costolo said that one way for Snap to mitigate those risks, as Facebook increasingly copies its features, is to really try to distinguish its service. Take a listen.
When you're competing directly against Facebook, they can just bring enormous market leverage to bear against you. And so you have to look for, flanks, if you will, into which you can operate and move.
Just yesterday, Snap launched its first ever twice daily news show that was with CNBC's cousin company, NBC News. We'll have to see if that kind of focus on premium content and even premium news is something that Snap is going to continue to try to build out as it works to distinguish its service from the likes of Facebook and Instagram. Guys, back over to you.
All right, Julia Borson, thanks so much. Interesting words of advice from Dick Costolo, the former CEO of Twitter, considering Twitter didn't actually follow that advice itself. Steve Grasso.
He's learned a lot from that. I think that maybe you see Twitter doing well. Guy talked about it the other day. I'm still holding some shares in Twitter. I think maybe it's doing well because people took a hiatus from Snap waiting for this lockup depression and moved into another social media stock. I know you could opine over whether it's a long-term investment strategy or not, but there's certain people that still believe in Snap, and they believe that Facebook is not going to take everything that they do and replicate it. And if for those people, it looks like you're going to get a hell of a discount below that $17 IPO price.
Those people who still believe in Snap.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I read the one of the first things I read this morning was that, Evan Spiegel and Miranda Kerr are yachting. What do they call it? A brocation or something like that. I think he's entitled. It's a great example of the sentiment being just so bad when those are the sorts of stories that are dominating, you know, the news on the stock on any particular day. And it's really important to think about this lockup. You know, most lockups that we saw on some very high-profile stocks over the last 5 years, took a long time for this amount of shares to come. So the fact that it's so abbreviated, 150 days, I think a lot of things are getting accentuated. I think the sentiment is really bad. So, you know, who knows what the heck the stock's going to do into the July 31st lockup. But at some point, it's going to be like a coiled spring. It's going to bounce back. We know that there's 30% short interest or something like that. So let's give Spiegel a break here, people.
I totally agree with giving him a break. I mean, I don't own the stock. I've never liked the stock. But first of all, I mean, he owns all the votes, right? So if he wants to go on vacation, he's going on vacation. He deserves it. The second thing, as it relates to their quarter, the quarter's over. It already happened, right? The rest is just accounting and filing the Q. So that doesn't really matter. And if you want to sell shares under a lockup, you can do that from other places, which is the beauty of the internet, right? I don't understand being all over him about this, him going on vacation.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He should, first absolutely.
Let's say broke. He's with his wife, right? Why is that a broke?
Because he's with his crew. He's got his crew on a yacht.
And his wife and his crew.
Yeah.
It's very 1980s.
You have a crew, don't you?
No, I don't have a crew.
His crew was like Cocoon. Yeah. You remember that movie in the 80s? What? No. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway.
Go ahead.
But what I do take, again, umbrage from the other day, yes. I'll take umbrage again. Uh-huh. Because on May 11th, when they reported their first quarter as a publicly traded company, when the stock was down some 20%, he was awfully glib in the conference call, if you recall. We made mention of that. So I think he exacerbated what was a lousy quarter.
Look at you, SAT man today with
good
the words.
Good words. Umbrage. Yeah. I don't know how to spell either one of them, but I used them both correctly. With that said, I do think there's further downside. We've talked about this. You had somebody on your show a few weeks ago that said they could see this as a single-digit name. I'm not certain about that. I think it goes lower from here, though.
All right. Let's stick with Snap here. And Dan is taking a look at what the options market is implying on the heels of the lockup expiration.
Yeah, so I think it's important to remember that this is a stock that has obviously a very short history. Options have not been trading for too long. Take it easy over there, pal. There's a couple dates here, and as options traders, they like to look at dates. We know what's coming here. So as Julia just said, on July 31st, maybe there's 400 million shares that are going to come off lockup. If you look at the options market, you look at the at-the-money to straddle for the August 4th weekly options, it's implying about a 10% move in either direction, which seems kind of fair. I mean, the stock is down about 50% from its post-IPO highs. Let's look at the other date, which is going to be August 10th. That's when they're going to report their second report as a public company here. The options market, which is obviously including the other lockup, is implying about a 15% move in either direction. Listen, obviously there's no guarantee. As Guy said earlier, after that first quarter that they reported, the stock was down 21%. This is just kind of giving you a guidepost. This is kind of how options traders are pricing risk in the story. And I think it's really important to remember as we look at this thing, this has been a one-way train here, 30% short interest. We know there's a lot of stock coming here that could alleviate things. But when sentiment goes, one way here, you could have a quick snapback, in this thing. Guy, what am I drawing here?
It's a ghost that from
This is their logo here. Yeah. You could have a quick snapback.
Snap logo.
Seems like the whole world is fairly well convinced that this thing's going to single digits. I'll bet you have a relief rally before that. How's that?
That was excellent board work, Dan.
No, I don't think so at all. I think that Carter Braxton-Worth is pinnacle of, pardon me?
There's the Snap logo. He doesn't draw
ghosts. Come on, guys. Stay with us here.
I'm sorry.
Anyway.
Good job, Dan.
I thought it was good, Dan. For more options action, check out the full show tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. All right, still ahead. Microsoft hitting a fresh all-time high in the after hours following its earnings report. The conference call is well underway. We'll hear from the CEO and what is driving the quarter right after the break. Welcome back to Fast Money. Microsoft hitting a fresh all-time high after hours following earnings. For more on what CEO Satya Nadella just said about the quarter, let's get to Josh Lifton, who is back at headquarters. Hi, Josh.
Well, Melissa, the key number for this report here, commercial cloud annualized revenue run rate, that hit $18.9 billion. That was up almost 60%. You saw gross margins also expand. No surprise, CEO Satya Nadella kicked off this call by taking a victory lap. Take a listen.
I'm proud of the progress, particularly the strength of our commercial cloud results. FY17 all up was a tremendous year of customer momentum with cloud, AI, and digital transformation. Our technology worldview of an intelligent cloud and an intelligent edge is resonating with businesses everywhere.
Now, Melissa, Nadella went on to say that this quarter's cloud growth does put Microsoft on track to hit that bogey they placed for themselves, $20 billion in fiscal 2018. He also noted Azure revenue growth, 97%, said it's now in more than 40 countries regionally. Back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Josh Lipton. I mean, in terms of the cloud leader now, it's really pretty much on par or exceeded Amazon Web Services, which is also a big milestone for Microsoft.
100%. So what does this illustrate? And Pete's been on this story, but to me what it illustrates is how quickly they being Microsoft, were able to make this turn, and not an insignificant turn for a company of their size, and how slow that IBM is to make a similar turn. So all this does to me is reinforces Steve's secular short in IBM and the fact that they just can't get it right and Microsoft does. What's the right valuation for Microsoft? I think given the growth, 98% growth, as I mean, their cloud growth is spectacular. You can make a pretty compelling argument that this could trade 25 times next year's earnings, which gets you to about an $83, $84 stock.
What's your take, Dan?
It's getting a little stretched here. I mean, I think it's important to remember that this is a transition that the company needed to make. When you think about their legacy businesses, they're shrinking. And so, you know, the fact is that they had a new CEO come in with a mandate to really move towards the cloud. He was running their cloud businesses. Obviously, they weren't moving fast enough, you know, before Nadella came on. So to me, listen, it's a great quarter. The stock has reacted really well. I think that headline EPS beat, it's a loss carry forward from their mobile phone business. You got to remember, this is a company that's actually made some bad decisions in the past. Their acquisition of Nokia, they took almost a $2 billion loss carry forward for that. So it wasn't the headline EPS beat that you think. So to me, I think you don't chase it up at $77, but could you get to 25 times in a world where some of its competitors are trading at a richer multiple? Probably.
Let's bring in David Garrity here of GVA Research. He's been on the red phone monitoring the call. So, David, in terms of where Microsoft is trading, all-time high right now, and the quarter reported, would you buy the stock here?
I think the company looks very attractive. I think in terms of the expectations for earnings growth going out through FY19, we see an acceleration from basically what had been a 1% decline over the last 3 years through FY15 to probably about a 11 to 13% growth rate in terms of earnings. Obviously, for the quarter, the street was expecting only about, you know, less than 3%. They came in at close to 9. So we're seeing this uptick. We're seeing the acceleration towards that expected growth rate going forward. Certainly favors a better multiple. And if you want to look at cloud computing in terms of Azure, you know, with 40 countries that they're rolled out to, they've got more regions covered worldwide than Amazon Web Services. And you're seeing that the uptake in terms of commercial customers now. From a survey 6 months ago, 20% of commercial customers said Azure would be their first choice. Now they're saying 40% of customers surveyed are saying that Azure would be their first choice. It looks like Microsoft is potentially giving Amazon Web Services a run for its money. And given the kind of growth and given the kind of leverage that we're going to be seeing off of pricing and margins coming out of that area, certainly higher multiples are probably justified.
So, David, when you talk about higher multiples, break down for me the big parts of the business. What multiple, you know, Azure growing so quickly, what multiple should that get versus the other parts of the business?
I mean, certainly, if you're looking at Azure, you're looking at a revenue growth rate of close to 100%. Obviously, you're not going to bring that down to the bottom line. But the thing that you are going to be looking at here is what happens in terms of the commercial cloud computing, where they're running at about 18.9 billion annual rate in the fourth quarter. The fact that that business has been margins of about 50% below the corporate average, but to the extent that average revenue, average pricing per user is ticking up, I mean, that's a business where I'd potentially, as you see the margins improve, you'd probably put maybe a 30 to a 40 times multiple on that for the base business, the commodity business around PCs. You know, that obviously value it at their cash that's being generated. Maybe it's worth 10 times earnings. But overall, as you see the mix shift towards higher growth, improving margin businesses, gaining share, I mean, certainly you're going to have to see Microsoft certainly beating out the other legacy IT providers, such as an IBM and perhaps an Oracle, and potentially move towards new highs as we go forward, not just in the after hours, but over the next 12 months.
So, David, whenever someone gives Amazon a run for their money, they don't care about margins. What can they do going forward to make Azure less of a choice or not their first choice? Can Amazon just, they don't care about their margins.
What do they do? Right? Another pricing war, right? We've seen that before, David, many times.
Yeah, no, certainly we've seen pricing wars, and certainly Amazon, you know, as a company overall, has been, you know, not shy about starting them. I think, though, that, you know, given the multiple relative to the growth rate, you know, Amazon certainly relative to growth expectations, trading at a multiple well beyond that of Microsoft. So in terms of price to earnings growth, Microsoft is less than 2. Amazon, based on my numbers here, is approximately, you know, a little bit higher. I think that, you know, Amazon wants to start a price war. I think potentially the people who may suffer here, they're not the retailers. I think they're more likely the IBMs, the Oracles, the others. I think Microsoft now has gotten themselves in a position where as a number two,
right,
they're gaining a significant enough share. It really, a price war pushes out the marginal players, three, four, five.
All right, David, thank you. David Garrity, GVA. Guy Dami, given what David has said, what's your trade on Microsoft tomorrow?
Stay long. I think you stay long. You stay the course. I mean, I understand at a certain point people look at this and say it's expensive on valuation, given his historical valuation. But it's a different company than it was 10 years ago as well. So I think they deserve that premium multiple. So I say you stay long the name.
In terms of the inroads of the tremendous, I mean, growing any sort of business revenue by 97%, that's almost unheard of. How does that make an Oracle
well,
look,
I'll
or
just
an
say
AWS
this, is that,
look in comparison?
Let's just use this as an example because, you know, when China was growing for Apple, it was growing 100% a year, you know, year over year for a couple of years, and then it stopped. And now it's, you know, declining, you know. So these are great headlines right now. They're doubling year over year. That's going to moderate at some point. And then the other point is, like he mentioned, that 50% gross margins is below the company average at about in the mid-60s, that sort of thing. So at some point, you're going to see the growth moderate. You're going to see some margin pressure. And then you may have a multiple that's probably more in line with something that's historical, especially when you consider the legacy businesses that are actually declining year over year.
In your mind, the extrapolation to some of the other tech earnings that we're going to be getting?
I think you have to look at legacy versus the new age of business. And I think that there's only a certain amount of companies that could make that segue. So I don't know if you can make this where you just said that earnings growth where they have in their cloud business. I don't know if you can overlay that on any other business that we're going to hear from.
Right. Karen, quick.
I mean, Google also has. It's not going to move the needle so much. But your question about Amazon competing on price, I think, is the biggest issue.
Yeah. All right. Up next, chip stocks soaring this year. Guys looking for a name for, about one name, actually, for a breakout. More Fast Money coming up. Time for the final trade. Steve Grasso.
Netflix. History shows us that when it pops up 10%, there's more still left of the tank. Netflix a buy.
Karen.
Yes. Well, talking about the energy space, the biggest exposure I have, Golar, GLNG.
Dan Nathan.
Microsoft's up right now in the aftermarket, 4%. That was the implied move in the options market. I suspect some of these big cap stocks settle in at the recent breakout, so I would not be chasing Microsoft.
Big 08 tomorrow.
Yeah, it's always big. When
no,
is
no,
it
no,
not
no.
Big?
It's particularly big tomorrow.
Are you on it?
Well, stop. Stop.
Stop it.
I don't know who's not here.
Shut the front door.
Shut the front door.
Okay, what's your final trade?
Oh, we're there? We're, quick.
Yeah.
Xilinx reports, I think, on the 26th. You're going to see some analysts upgrade the name.
I'm Melissa Lee. Thanks for watching. Mad Money starts right now.